Hi, I'm Luke Dennis, the Development Director at WYSO. We are happy we can deliver these programs to you, people who listen on the web, and we rely on you to help us pay for this service. So at our website, wyso.org, click Support This Station and help keep these services coming. And thank you.
Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and today my guest is Larry Baker, returning to the program for the second time. And Larry, I'm trying to remember, how long ago was that I talked to you?
I was beginning to take it personally. You never called me back. It was September the 15th, 1997.
Are you serious? You actually remember the date?
I remember the date because I have a poster from the bookstore there that I was appearing at that night.
Okay. So is this your second interview in your lifetime then? I mean, is that the first one? This is the second?
Yeah, with you, and nobody else has ever heard of me.
Okay, Larry. Larry, what was that book? Remind me. It was on some big imprint. What was that Knopf?
Knopf.
It's a big book. Didn't you get some like mega advance for that?
I got enough money to put you and me and all of our children through college for a long time. And pay for our retirements. Yes, it was Knopf. The book was called Flamingo Rising, all about the world's largest drive-in movie theater.
Yeah, I remember that now. But the thing, it's funny, when I booked you on the show, I just got the book and I thought, this looks like an interesting book. I didn't know anything about you getting a big advance, or I didn't know this thing was going to be turned into some kind of a TV show, and that's what ended up happening?
It was a Hallmark movie, but you cannot, I forbid anybody to ever watch that movie again. It was awful.
Really?
Yeah. It was not only a bad adaptation, it was. I'm not going to talk about it. It's bad karma. You know, I cashed the check. That's all that matters.
Right. Okay, so here we are all this time later. What's happened in the meantime? I know you've put out some other books, and I confess I hadn't read them. I hadn't even heard about them.
Wait a minute. You told me that you read another book of mine twice.
Well, that's this other one, but there was another book like 5 years ago. You were whining about it in some editorial about how none of the reviewers would review it. And...
Right. I went from major publisher down to minor publisher who went out of business, and then I was lucky to get a really small press, but a great guy, a Midwest publisher, to pick up my third book called A Good Man, and that's the one that I wanted you to read because it's all about you. You know, it's all about a talk show radio host. And I wrote it just for you. I would have dedicated it to you, except I dedicated it to Harry Chapin and Flannery O'Connor.
You know, I forgot to wear my waders. So the book that you just alluded to that I have read and reread is called A Good Man, and it's published by this press that is just there just outside Iowa City, isn't it?
Right. It's been in business for 20 years. It's one of those sort of perfect example of small press independence, puts out quality books, and, you know, the reviewers don't pay attention to him, and he doesn't get the coverage that he deserves. But he's been very great to me, and he's done. I have another book coming out with him in the spring, and that'll be my third book with him. So I'm very happy here, except nobody's ever heard of me since 1997.
Well, I've heard of you.
Well, that's because I keep emailing you and pestering you.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it was the one where you said, please read my book before I die.
Was that it? Put it on your stack of to read before Larry Baker croaks.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think this book is high quality. I think that this was the great American novel of, what was it, 2009 this book came out?
2009, yeah.
And I am never a person to go so far back unless I make a mistake, okay? So all right. I made a mistake. I missed this book. I didn't know it existed. You brought it to my attention, and I think it's important for readers to hear about this story. So our main character is a guy named Harry. Have you done a count in your book how many different Harrys are mentioned in this story? I mean, I was feeling a little harried by it all.
There's probably about 30 different Harrys in this book, and that's one of the points of this character. He's fascinated with his own name, and he tries to figure out why he was named Harry, and then as you remember, there's a big dinner party, and he's in this small Florida town, and this secret host invites him to this secret party, and everybody at the party is named Harry, because he's just trying to figure out who he is. And it turns out he's adopted, and you're never quite sure where he comes from, but that's all part of the mystery of the story. But my reason I really like this guy is because he's got the job that's the closest thing I can think of to being a writer, which is a radio talk show host, which is you're talking all the time, and you're never sure anybody's listening. You know they're out there somewhere, but you have to keep talking, just like you have to keep writing these stories. So Harry works the 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. shift, and nobody ever calls him until late in the book. And I thought, that's a life that I understand right there.
And it's this little 100-watt station in St. Augustine, Florida.
Right.
And he is a drunk. He's an alcoholic. He sits there and he reads stuff over and over. He talks to himself. He's kind of goofy on the air quite a bit of the time, but then he somehow finds this niche where he's talking a lot about books, and that's pretty cool.
Right. He's a functioning alcoholic, and you know he's lost all of his big time jobs, and this is sort of the idea from that Harry Chapin song I mentioned, WOLD. I sort of stole the character from that song. You know, he's worked his way through radio. He's getting too old for this stuff. He drinks too much. And so he's lucky to get this job at the end, and he's a political commentator, but then, you know, 9/11 happens, and then the Iraq War happens, and he gets really disillusioned with America, and he stops talking about politics and just starts talking about books. And he reads books on the air, and he reads poetry on the air, and, you know, one of the threads that's going through the entire story is that he's trying to figure out where he came from, and he thinks the answer is in a book somewhere. And so he wants to find out what the book is. But the answer is he's in his own book. I mean, he's a creation of another person who stole ideas from other people. I mean, I stole ideas from Harry Chapin and Flannery O'Connor and threw in lines from all sorts of American literature. And he's all part of this world of stories, and then he has to deal with the second coming of Christ. So other than that, he's got a stress-free job.
Larry Baker joins us. His new book is A Good Man. Okay, we've got this pathetic loser
who's
washed out of all of his radio jobs. He
right.
ends up in Florida. He's a loser. He's living in his car. Okay, when he shows up, but it's a very nice car. It's a Buick. Nice car.
You look in the back of that book, there's a picture of that Buick.
I saw that. It's a Park Avenue, right?
I love that. Buick Park Avenue, 1998.
Okay, so he shows up in Florida. He goes to this radio station, and he gets a job. And he immediately develops a friendship with this guy who is this right-wing nut job, a guy who is definitely in the Tea Party at this point, if he's still around, a guy who was really, really crazed, has a right-wing talk show. And then there's this other host who he's totally intrigued by because she does her show remotely from her kitchen, and it's kind of a cooking show, and her name is Nora, and he is just obsessed with her.
And he goes to the station the first days in town looking for a job because he's been in a bar that morning listening to her talk about food, and he just falls in love with her. And he thinks, this is perfect. I'll get a job at the station where she works. He goes to the station, meets the right-wing talk show host, Captain Jack Tunnell, who's got a parakeet named Jimmy Buffett he keeps in a cage in the studio with him. And he discovers that Nora doesn't broadcast from the station. In fact, supposedly nobody knows where Nora lives. She just has a show that's piped into the station. And then it takes this sort of catastrophic event. We want to don't want to give away too much, but it's 9/11. And Harry, somebody in the tower on 9/11 tries to call Harry and doesn't get through because Harry's in a drunken stupor that morning and sleeps right through the whole event. And so he goes on the show that night, starts reading Emily Dickinson, and that's bound to depress you right there. Reads Emily Dickinson, does this whole show, goes home, the phone is ringing, and it's this Nora woman saying, Harry, it's time you and I had breakfast. And that's when he meets her finally. And she actually only lives, well, I'm not going to give too much away here, but yeah. She lives very close all that time. And it turns out that everybody knew where Nora lived, but they weren't telling Harry.
And Nora is a woman with a million secrets, and she and Harry have something in common in that both of them really are not the people that they supposedly are. They actually have different names than they started with.
Right. And I know you probably don't remember this from Flamingo Rising, that first novel, but Nora is a character from that book.
Uh-huh.
She is the Alice from that book.
I remember the Alice, okay.
Right. So Nora has changed identities, but she used to be Alice, just like, well, Polly is in both books. The sort of sexy teenager in Flamingo is now pushing 60, and she's still incredibly sexy. And Abraham and his wife Grace and Dexter, those characters sort of creep back in. And Harry's in this world of characters that existed before he existed. And he falls in love with Nora, whose real name is Alice. And it turns out Nora has a past where, as another character, Polly, points out, Harry, you're lucky. You know, you didn't get too close to her because she would just break your heart. And we won't say what happens to Nora or Alice, but she's carrying a lot of baggage.
And, of course, we've got buried beneath everything this drive-in movie theater, and you're kind of obsessed with them, aren't you? This has been a part of your life, hasn't it?
Well, I worked for 15 years in the theater business. I used to get dates. I tell people, hey, I'm in the theater business. You know, you want to get in the movies? Which meant that I could get them tickets to the theaters that I owned. I sort of worked my way through college as a movie theater manager, drive-in movies, indoor theaters, and, you know, showing Disney movies, pornographic movies, documentaries, everything I can. And I kept thinking through that whole experience. There's a ton of stories here. And that became my first novel, and that became the background to this novel, A Good Man, which, by the way, is available for sale. Amazon, unfortunately, the Death Star Amazon. Or you can write the publisher directly.
The Death Star?
The Death Star Amazon, yeah.
Gee, that's cold. So, okay, you also, I'm looking at your CV here, and it says that you also managed a strip club.
Oh, thanks for bringing that up, Vic.
Well, I'm sure we've got listeners out there who are going to go, wow, I got to read this guy's book now.
Yeah, this is the kind of guy I would like to know right here. This goes back to, are you ready for this? When I was 18 years old, I lied about my age. I rented a tuxedo, a place called the Green Gate Club in San Antonio, which I think the door is still there. But it was an old, just borderline strip burlesque house, looking for a job. Again, I lied about my age, walked in, and I convinced them that I was the man for the job. And basically all I had to do was like talk to drunk servicemen down in San Antonio for 5 minutes in between acts.
Oh.
And so, again, I was 18, and it's a real education to, I learned a lot about women and also about the psychology of drunk Air Force guys. But I didn't have that job too long, thank God. But it's all part of the resume. Uh-huh. That and the Pinkerton security guard and the movie theater manager and the public relations guy, city council member, and now, you know, world famous obscure writer.
Yeah, Larry, you wrote that book apparently that maybe cost you getting reelected to the third term on the Iowa City City Council.
Yeah.
Well, it sounded like maybe the town and gown thing came crashing down on you after that.
Well, no, I think it was Larry Baker's ego came crashing down on him. No, I spent two terms on the city council here, and then I wrote about an experience that happened during one of those terms. And of course, you change the names and sort of obscure stuff that it's very obvious. You know, outside of Iowa City, nobody would know what I was talking about. In Iowa City, everybody knew what I was talking about. And I didn't get reelected. I ran, and actually, a few years later, I tried to run again, and I came in fifth.
You ran under an assumed name?
No, that was my problem. I ran as myself, and evidently, these people have longer memories than I give them credit for. So I didn't even make it out of the primary. And as my wife said, Larry, I think the people have spoken. And I said, yeah, the bastards, they spoke. All right, I understand. So anyway, I've settled down, and I just teach now, and I write, and put out books that, you know, a few hundred people in the world know about. But when I die, Vic, that copy of the book that you have is going to be very valuable. Hold on to that.
Okay, eBay, here we come.
That's right, but
Larry Baker joins us. His book is A Good Man. And Larry, as you know, last night when I tried to confirm the interview, I called a number in Iowa City, and a woman answered the phone, and I said, Larry Baker, please, and she instantly hung up on me.
See, I'm not sure why I'm laughing at that. Because it tells me, hell, you may have been talking to my wife. I'm not sure. But, I can understand that reaction from a few people in town. It's okay, though. I'm older, wiser, mellower. I'm writing better books. You know, I think every book that I write now is better. A Good Man, I think, is my best book. And you can trust me because I'm the author, right?
Exactly.
But it's a book that works on so many different, you know, political, religious, literary levels. And I think it's funny, too. So,
don't feel bad saying that. Okay, that it's your best book, because your next book is going to be even better, right?
Well,
That is The Education of Nancy Adams?
The Education of Nancy Adams.
Okay.
Which is a story about a 38-year-old woman who is drinking her dead husband's, you know, estate, has never worked in her life at all, and she's slowly going broke and getting weird, and she gets a phone call from the principal of the high school she graduated from, offering her a job. Now, she's been a substitute teacher. She's got degrees, but she's never taught full time. This principal used to be her history teacher when she was in high school, and she was in love with him. And so here it is. The guy she was in love with offers her a job at the school she graduated from. She thinks this is karma, serendipity, or whatever. Everything's going to work out. She gets there, and within the first week, she discovers, no, he has no interest at all in her. He hired her because he's been friends with her all these years, but he hired her because there's a young student, as he says to her, she really needs a strong older woman to help her. And all of a sudden, this Nancy Adams character thinks to herself, Jesus, I've just become the older woman in somebody else's life.
Well, that's another cautionary tale then.
And she's a smart woman, and she literally, when she went to Notre Dame to college, she had to read The Education of Henry Adams, and she's always sort of like been burdened by that, and everybody making jokes about her name and his name, and she finally starts talking to Henry Adams throughout this book and to respond to him. So you think Harry Ducharme's a little weird. This woman's a little weird, too, and she also likes to shoot guns.
So it's set in the South?
It was once again set in the South, and this one is a little bit different because I couldn't use a real town, even though the events in it are inspired by a real town.
You afraid they'll come after you?
Well, I've already burned bridges in one place. I'd like to go back and vacation in Florida every once in a while.
Okay.
Without pitchforks coming after me.
Larry Baker joins us. His most recent book is A Good Man. And I really enjoyed this book because you have this punchy style and you write with a lot of humor. And even when we're talking about very serious subjects, There's a lot of humor there, and I love all the literary allusions that you have in there and the quotes. You pulled out a nice section of my favorite poet, Dylan Thomas, who spent some drunken time in Iowa City back in the 50s.
Yeah, as have I.
Back in the 50s?
Back in my 50s.
Oh, okay. And you also really won my heart because you mentioned at least three people in your book that have been on this program.
You're kidding me.
No. No, Christopher Hitchens.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Tim O'Brien.
Great.
And my favorite of the three, because she's involved in a lengthy fantasy segment in your book, Ann Coulter.
Wait a minute. Back up. Ann Coulter. You interviewed Ann Coulter?
You betcha.
Face to face?
We get them all. Oh, no. She called it in.
Okay, good. Okay, I'm scared because, you know, I'm convinced that she's actually a man. So I was a little worried about you there in a studio alone with her. She's got those big knuckles, you know. Ann Coulter, yes. There is a great scene where Harry Ducharme, my character, is a little bit tipsy on air. He calls his right-wing friend Captain Jack Tunnel, who's in a bar. And they're on the air talking to each other, and the bar turns the music off and turns on the speaker to have the whole conversation in the bar, plus it's going out all over St. Augustine. And basically they're talking about their favorite threesomes, and Captain Jack is giving Harry trouble because Harry would obviously like to have Flannery O'Connor and Emily Dickinson as a threesome. And whereas Captain
This is just Jack, for literary talk, right?
Right, okay. It's literary talk.
Thank
it's
you. Just, Thank
it's,
you very
it's
much.
It's all metaphor.
Okay, thank you.
So Captain Jack then describes his favorite metaphorical threesome, which would be Ann Coulter and, drumroll, Nancy Grace. And Captain Jack is a big, heavy, sweaty guy. And so as he's describing this, people all over town are listening in on this conversation and just basically having to stick their heads out the window to retch or get fresh air or whatever. But it's one of the most profoundly disturbing scenes in American literature, I think.
And an FCC violation.
Thank
you for being careful about your description of that. And as we learn when we read the book, Jack's whole thing is very fanciful.
It's a meeting of opposites, right? The sort of flesh of Nancy Grace and the bones of Ann Coulter. And I won't go any further.
Thank you very much. The book is A Good Man. Larry Baker wrote it. You also mention an institution that I know some of my listeners are familiar with here in Southwest Ohio, and that is the Scattergood School in West Branch, Iowa. That is part of your story.
It's where Harry Ducharme grew up. You're right down the road from Scattergood, a little town called Springville, which really exists. And as you recall, there's a tombstone in there, a picture of a tombstone in the book of a real grave there. And Harry goes to school at Scattergood. He's a Quaker. He's raised as a Quaker. And it's a lot of interesting history around here, and John Brown and all sorts of stuff. And so Harry's part of that Midwest history, and he ends up, you know, the scene where he actually appears in the book, he's standing knee-deep in the Atlantic, opens his eyes and doesn't know how he got there because he was drunk in Atlanta and drove all the way to Florida and wakes up in the ocean on Election Day 2008.
Well, it's really a circular sensation to read A Good Man because you keep circling back and bringing in these different events at different times with different people, yet it all ties together somehow. Just like this interview, in some weird way, keeps circling back in my mind because by some bizarre coincidence, last week we interviewed someone who wrote a book about John Brown, and a couple of weeks ago we interviewed a guy who kept talking about Nancy Grace. It's just really, really weird. And then this morning I was getting ready to finish rereading your book, and I looked at the clock to see what time it was, and it said 9/11.
Well, it's a key scene, and if one of the favorite things I did in this book, which is one of the reasons I like it as a writer, is because it uses the words of so many other people and to sort of flow seamlessly into the story I'm trying to write, is that if you remember in the 9/11 scene, there's a description from the point of view of somebody in the chapel next door to 9/11. And that's literally was published on September the 12th. And I talked to Nathan Brockman at the Christian Church in New York City, and he said, sure, go ahead and use the whole thing. And so bringing the reality of somebody else's words into a fictional story, that's part of the pattern in this book over and over again. And I'm grateful to a lot of people who let me use stuff. And I won't give too much away, but I will say this, that the very end of the book was actually written by somebody else and not me.
Excellent. I recognize Nora Roberts' work. Well, Larry, it's really been great having you back on the program, and we'll have to have you back for The Education of Nancy Adams when it comes out. So please tell your publisher to be aware of our interest.
You will get a book. And, you know, can I do like a 30-second plug for a book we have not talked about?
Go for it.
It's called Love and Other Delusions. It's my third novel. It's my fourth novel. It's a short one, 170 pages. I'll send you a copy. No plug needed. But basically, it's about a older woman having an affair with a younger man for 20 years. And she's talking to her psychiatrist, trying to explain how she could continue this and assume that it was going to work. It's called Love and Other Delusions. It's also, you know, on Amazon. But it's a very different kind of book. If you think that there are some adult scenes in and A Good Man, this book is 170 pages of adult scenes. So I just want to throw that plug in there because that's even more obscure than A Good Man. So, Vic, I appreciate
now
this
that's
very much.
Your autobiography you're describing, and it's available through the Death Star, right?
Right, the Death Star.
Okay.
She'll be nameless.
Well, it's fun talking to you, and I'm sorry that it's been 15, 16 years since the last time we had a conversation, so we'll have to do it again.
No, I appreciate it very much, and I'm looking forward to it.
The book is A Good Man. Larry Baker wrote it, and it was published by Ice Cube Books out of, was it West Branch, Iowa?
North Liberty, Iowa.
I'm sorry. I get my suburbs mixed up.
You're north and west. Okay.
There's North Liberty, right? Isn't there also West Liberty?
There is. That's where my vet is, West Liberty.
Okay,
right.
Gotcha. I'm trying to remember all my little Iowa towns.
All right.
Well, Larry, thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Vic.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. If you ever miss an episode of The Book Nook, don't worry. You can hear archived editions of the program going back almost 3 years. Just go to the Book Nook page on the WYSO website at wyso.org, where we have over 140 interviews archived. You can click on them and listen. That's over 70 hours of authors talking about their books. Unbelievable. 20 years ago, when we started interviewing authors, we said, you know, this is a valuable thing. We hope that you place value in it as we go into our fall membership campaign. Why don't you go to wyso.org and make a pledge to your public radio station? The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.